Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today we'll be rethinking birth pain. It's not called labor for nothing, but is there a purpose to the pain? What happens when you stop thinking of birth as an emergency and start seeing it as a physiological emergence? If you assume that your confidence will falter, then can preparing differently help you have a better experience? Rhea Dempsey tells us more. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Casual Tree Maternity, offering a stylish and comfortable approach to maternity clothing without the price tag. Go to casualtree.com and use the code Birthful to save 20% off on purchases of $20 or more. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Megan Oftling, a fabulous birth doula and childbirth educator in Albuquerque who is all about offering women the information and support they need to make their own empowered birth choices. Learn more at womanofvalorbirth.com. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thanks again for all the love you give the show. And if you like what you hear, tell your friends about it. Tell everyone about it and make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. To best support this podcast, please support its sponsors, which in today's case are Casual Tree Maternity, Megan Oftling, and Expectful. Also, pregnant people, if you've only prepared for the having a birth part, but not so much for the having a baby part, then you're only halfway there. Let's get you postpartum ready. Go sign up for my Thrive With Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes at birthfulcourses.com. And let me tell you, the class is set up to be taken over 5 weeks, but that's just a guideline. You can access all the content right away and really take it at your own pace. Refer to it as many times as you want after baby is born, before baby is born. All the things. So go sign up now at birthfulcourses.com. And yeah, do it now before baby arrives, not when you're not sleeping and baby's crying. Do it now. All right. My guest for today's renewed episode is the fabulous Rhea Dempsey. And we're going to be talking about one of the biggest elephants in the labor room, which is, of course, the pain of labor. And so people don't even want to talk about it as pain. Well, intense sensation, whatever you want. There's a purpose to it. Rhea and I first talked not long after I started doing the podcast, but because the information is so relevant and timeless, I'm dusting this one off. I've updated the links on the show notes and made sure they all work properly, so do check those out. Let me tell you a little bit about Rhea. She is a childbirth educator, trainer, doula, counselor, speaker, and author with nearly 40 years of experience working with families before, during, and after birth. In that time, she has attended over 1,000 births in home and hospital settings, and her passion is to educate people about the impact of birth culture or on the outcome of our births. Instead of fear, she wants people to go into labor with confidence in their bodies as well as their support people, their support team, and with the knowledge that will give them the best possibility of a flowing birth. Rhea has a reputation as one of the foremost thinkers on the topic of working with pain in childbirth and its connection to normal physiological birthing. And that's what we're going to be diving into today, talking about the why the pain is there and rethinking it. I also have to say that after reading Rhea's book, it immediately became one of my top recommended books for birth. The book is called Birth with Confidence, Savvy Choices for Normal Birth. So if you want to check that out as well. All right, here we go. Rhea, thank you so much. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Adriana. So pleased to be here with you and speaking to another passionate woman of birth.
Yes, yes. And so we'd love to talk about birth because it's so interesting. And it touches all of us to some extent. So yeah, let's get to doing this thing that we love so much.
Good.
Yeah. So you have gotten into this sort of wheelhouse of being known for really digging deep into the what it is about the pain, the intensity of childbirth. What made you get into that and start to think and deconstruct and figure out that it even may have a purpose?
Yeah, okay. So there's a number of threads that come together around that issue about pain. Firstly, maybe just a little bit of my own background. I was, before I had my own first child all those years ago, what we call over here a physical education teacher and an outdoor adventure sort of facilitator. So that means that really you're, to do that work, you're sort of working with people with their bodies and working with people with their bodies in sort of extreme situations, I guess. And in doing that work, it's very clear to see that for so many of us, you know, there is much more we could do and achieve with our bodies, except that our thinking and our brain and our sort of story about ourselves can often get in the way. So there's a psychological component in terms of how we work with our bodies, and particularly how we might achieve what I might call peak performance. So there's that aspect to it. And then there's also the aspect of what I've come to call really this idea of functional physiological pain, although it's not only me who talks about it like that, but within the world of achievement of the body, peak performance of the body, whether that's for health or well-being or fitness or achievements of one sort and another, there's certainly a total understanding that to do that, there's an engagement with functional physiological pain of our body working really strong and hard at these sort of peak performance levels. And there's not, for people who are undertaking that, then that's a challenge. There's a challenge, but they're not fearful of the pain in terms of thinking that it's about danger or disease or things going wrong. They just know that that's what happens with those muscles pumping and trying to get that oxygen into your lungs, and that what's going on with the hormones and the exchange of the oxygen in your body and so on, that is part of that functional physiological pain. So that was my territory before I had my own first baby. And then coming through the birth with my own first baby, which maybe we'll get into that story at some point, because it certainly points to that exchange between the particular birthing woman and what the birth culture is that she's birthing within.
Mm-hmm.
But which is sort of slightly, well, I mean, they all make a whole, but they're slightly different issues. So for me, having my first baby, really being fit and healthy and having that whole background of awareness with my body, that aspect of working with the functional physiological pain of the labor of my body opening and all of that, that was a natural territory for me. So when I came, not only then started that whole journey of being around births, and it's been a long time, as you remark, and it was certainly in the eras here in Australia, at least, before the whole idea of a doula or somebody who is doing that work of being at birth separate to midwives. So I had the privilege of just being around that scene, particularly the home birth scene, and saw that for many women, there was this aspect about the pain in labour really had such a negative and fearful aspect to it, so that they, not only were they challenged by the intensity, but they were challenged in their minds about really whether this was something that they wanted to embrace and work with. So it's sort of that combination, and then having that privileged place of being with so many women over so many years, women who really are what I call willing women, women who really want to have a go at working with their body and their baby towards that natural or normal physiological childbirth, and still, even with that intention, finding that they would get to places in the labour where, in fact, they felt like, you know, it was too much and this wasn't what they'd signed up for. It was more or greater or more challenging. And so that sort of edge about the pain, and then also the cultural story about pain in childbirth seems to have been really hijacked by a sort of a medicalised, I don't know, linking of birth into that medical scene seems to mean that instead of thinking about pain in childbirth as being an expression of our potency and power and health and well-being and vitality, you know, that zing of the body working so strong and hard for achievement, it's been sort of hijacked by these ideas about pain in a medical setting being about things going wrong, things being dangerous, things being about ill health, which, of course, in most things to do with medicine, that would be a correct assumption.
Yeah, and because we don't usually experience pain unless, I can see the physicality of it that you mentioned at the beginning. I hear it a lot from people who run, who do marathons, and getting to that point that they know their body's going to collapse, and it's their mind telling them, and they're like, no, we can, let's get through this, let's keep going, because they understand the physiology, yeah.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, and yet with birth again, as I'm saying, because of this very strong identification now of birth into that medical frame, then I think that there's there's two things. If I talk about the cultural thing, but also within that medical frame, you know, birth or pain in a medical context, which is escalating, going on for a long time and getting stronger and stronger and stronger, would in a medical setting of ill health or damage or danger really be a signal that something in the body is getting worse and worse and worse. But that's not what's going on in normal physiological childbirth. Neither is it something that's going on in somebody pursuing a marathon dream or a, you know, rock climbing or whatever other pursuit they might do. The escalation of the intensity is really about the body having to work stronger and harder to achieve whatever it is that we're undertaking. In our case, we're talking about birth. So there's a big reframing that needs to occur in terms of that embracing of that potency of the body, and that physiological functional pain, which is the way I talk about it, and it's a bit clumsy, but I think we just have to keep naming it to normalize it, as opposed to pathological pain, which is, you know, something that's coming really out of things going wrong in the body. But that blurring makes that very difficult for women. And anyway, pain in labor, just for a whole lot of reasons, got just really bad press. Bad press. You know, where are the positive stories about it? They're generally all negative stories. So women are, you know, often quite fearful about that aspect, you know, even before they start the labor. And then maybe I'll just go into something that I see in terms of that cultural impact of that, or the sort of amplification that happens in the culture. And I'm pretty sure that in America it's similar to here in Australia.
Yeah, when I look. Before you move into the cultural part a little bit, though, I want to talk about that, like just briefly sort of close up the concept of that physiological versus pathological. And I find, as I have not been doing this way as long, nearly as long as you've been doing, I've been a doula for nearly 10 years, but I find that just as something as simple as talking to the mom and sort of bringing her attention to the fact that the uterus is a big, enormous muscle that has to work really hard, that alone can kind of change their perspective of like, wait, right, this is a muscle that is doing all this work. When I work any of my other muscles for so long, of course they cramp up and get exhausted and hurt, but that doesn't mean something's wrong.
Exactly. Yes, it's a beautiful reframing, isn't it? To place birth in the context of the language I use, that sort of peak performance. And really, beautiful description, isn't it, for what happens for women in labor. That's a peak performance of their body, really doing that work of birthing that baby. So that can mean a sort of engagement with potency and power rather than a fearful, you know, surrendering of that process to be saved from that, I don't know, the discomfort, the pain and the fear of all of that. So it can be very powerful and simple, as you say, simple.
Yeah, exactly. And that switching the concept, in my daughter's school, there's this framed the saying on one of the classrooms, and it's very simple and I just love it. It says, we can do hard things.
Yay.
And we've sort of gotten away from that. Like, we try to do none of hard things. It's like, no, you can do hard things. And you know, I'm sure you can speak to this way better than I can, of the rewarding feeling of having done a hard thing. And I definitely want to talk more about that. But before we do, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Finding maternity clothes that are comfortable, stylish, and affordable can be a challenge. But the people at Casualty Maternity did not let that stop them. They said, challenge accepted, and created Casualty Maternity. The thing is, they know what it's like not to want to compromise on style during your pregnancy, and they take pride in offering hand-selected items that are fashionable, comfortable, and that won't break the bank. I, of course, went over to casualtree.com to take a look and loved so much of what I saw. So much so that I, you know, almost wish that I was pregnant so I could wear these things. Almost. They have super cute yet dressy nursing tops, maxi and midi dresses, denim, blouses, and casual tops suitable for both work and play, and even some really amazing, flowing, gorgeous gowns for maternity photo shoots. One of their best sellers, and definitely my favorite, is a maternity shirt, a t-shirt that says, "Don't eat watermelon seeds." And I might just have to get that one for myself. That one made me laugh out loud. Go check out that t-shirt and all the wonderful things they have at casualtree.com and get something for yourself or even for your friends. Use the code BIRTHFUL on checkout to save 20% off all purchases over $20. That's casualtree.com, so CASUALTREE.com, casualtree.com, and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off your purchase of $20 or more. And we're back talking with Rhea Dempsey. And before we left, we were talking about the rewarding feeling of doing a hard thing. And so, Rhea, can you speak more to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's two in answer to that question and staying within our, because we could go really wide with that, to keep it within the context about birth. Mind you, if you go deeply into birth, of course, it takes you into anything and everything. It's my prism for looking at just about anything that happens in life. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of two ways that I think just I'd like to respond to that reflection and how beautiful for your daughters to be seeing that every day. That one, it takes me one way to go, and we'll go both ways, but one way is into the what we know is the function of that physiological pain in childbirth and how important actually it is for the unfolding of the hormones. So that's one pathway. And the other pathway again, is this idea, I think, about what's going on in the culture about pain in childbirth. So maybe we'll talk about the hormones, then we can come to the...
Yeah, sounds good.
Cultural aspect, yeah? So... I noticed, Adriana, that you've had on your podcast Dr. Sarah Buckley, who's done that. Well, she's done lots of beautiful work, but last year that, you know, absolutely beautiful piece of work that she did on the hormones of pregnancy, birth, and breastfeeding.
Yes.
Other people have done such work, but Sarah's is so comprehensive. And I think, you know, it's in recent years, really, if I think about my history in being around childbirth, that we're just understanding more and more and more about what's going on in the hormones. And that, surprise, surprise, what we're learning about the hormones sort of speaks really to an ancient sort of knowledge about what those of us who've been birth workers across cultures and across time have known to be the sort of reality. For instance, you know, we talk about the mother feeling safe, and by that we mean feeling safe in the territory that she's giving birth in, and also feeling safe in terms of the emotional connections with the people that she's birthing with. And now we know that when we translate that feeling of safety, that really into the hormones, it's about, you know, well, is her body system being driven more by oxytocin, that the hormone of love and tending and befriending and feeling safe and nurtured and secure? Or is the birth process being hijacked by adrenaline, which is, you know, around the fear and the not feeling safe and so on and so on? So we're getting to learn much more about the underlying or the internal process of the hormones and how that relates to the behaviors, the connections, the territory she's birthing in and who she's birthing with. And as I say, Sarah's, you know, put a huge part of that together in a very easily able to understand way. So to get back then to this issue about pain, so the way that I explain it, and this is a very simplistic explanation, I guess.
Those are the best.
They're always the best. This is the work of an educator, isn't it? To distill something of that complexity that all those people like Sarah and others are doing in terms of that deeper research, and then an educator's gift sometimes is to be able to bring that to a simpler message that then people can take it on and it can help to make changes. So the idea about, so when we've got oxytocin, we know, is the big driver for birthing. I mean, a big driver for human interactions when we talk about oxytocin is that tend and befriend, nurturing, feeling safe, feeling secure, all of those feelings, you know, across the range of relationships that we have in our lives, whether that's with our babies or our children or our loved ones, our family, our lovers, our, you know, wherever that aspect of oxytocin. So we know in terms of birthing that oxytocin, when it's naturally occurring in the mother's body, is starting to open her heart to this baby. But not only that, that the oxytocin, of course, is the hormone, it's a bit more complex than this, but it's the big driving hormone to create those contractions that also open her body. So we've got that beautiful, you know, whole situation going on of the heart and the body being opened basically by this same sort of suffusion of hormone. And, of course, you would know, being a doula, that those of us hanging out with labouring women, I mean, basically we're oxytocin junkies because we are all falling in love. It's just pumping in those, in that birth space, that we're all affected by that hormone and how beautiful that is. And that's the start of the opening of everybody's hearts to this new baby, that village coming around that baby. But to come back to the oxytocin is driving the big contractions. The big contractions, of course, as they're escalating, that's bringing on that intensity of that functional physiological pain, those contractions getting stronger, bigger, closer together, more and more potent, more and more efficient in terms of the birth, but nonetheless more physically, functionally, painfully challenging. So as that builds, and once we get to a certain peak of that sort of intensity, there's another hormonal exchange that happens, which is the tip over into the endorphin system. And the endorphin system, endorphins really are our natural opiates in our body. And so when that connection happens and the endorphins come through, they're often called the feel-good hormones. They give us that lift. They give some moderation to the painful sensations. We have to say that advisedly, some moderation. They don't take it away. But I don't think that's even the most important thing that the endorphins do. The most important thing that the endorphins do is that they start to swamp the cerebral cortex. They take out that thinking, planning, alert brain, which really doesn't know much about birthing at all. And the endorphins, in fact, start to unfold what I call the evolutionary regression. So the mother then, with those strong contractions driving that functional physiological pain, which then triggers the endorphins as a response to that functional physiological pain, the endorphins start to swamp the cerebral cortex, takes that thinking, I mean, that thinking brain, how brilliant in our lives is that thinking brain? But it's not great for us when it's strongly alive in a birth situation. So the sooner it gets taken out of the picture, the better usually the birth is going to go. And so that link between the functional physiological pain and the expression of the endorphins in response to that is a huge trigger for the physiology of the birth to unfold because of this evolutionary regression. And so then the mother shifts into that deeper space within herself where she knows what it's like to be giving birth. She knows how to follow her body. The pain, the functional physiological pain is still driving, but there's just a whole different space that she's in, which means we usually know then that the labor is going to go brilliantly and that normal physiological childbirth is going to unfold. So it's the pain
that gets that takes it to a point where those endorphins can come in, and then the flow of birth can take over and have mom not be thinking and sort of properly give in to the process.
Exactly. Mm. So if we feel that fear and want to, you know, control or take out that pain, then we're really starting to interfere with something of this exchange in terms of these hormones that really are so supportive and, you know, facilitative of normal physiological childbirth. So, you know, often people, probably in America the same as here, people are pounding the pavement, you know, or doing their spin class or those bike rides and what have you, and they're repeating that mantra to themselves, you know, pain is my friend, pain is my friend, pain is my friend, as they're going up that hill and round that bend. And of course, never has that been so true as in childbirth, when that functional physiological pain has that purpose of not only it being the expression of the muscles working, but this triggering into the hormones, which is really the facilitative mix for that normal physiological childbirth. So, yeah, bring it on.
Mm-hmm. I like that though. I really like that. That was like an aha moment of how you explained it, of everything coming together, of giving it a purpose, because then it allows you to tip over. Because during birth, you can't kind of give birth. You have to do it all the way. You're all in. You can't just like, oh, I think I may. No, it's like you can't, you're not kind of pregnant. You're pregnant or not.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So so that's the hormonal link, but I want to know.
Yeah, what about the cultural part of it?
Okay, because if we had a cultural, I think again in America, like Australia, you know, in terms of that idea of pain is my friend, in terms of other physical pursuits and well-being and challenge pursuits, we do champion that idea of pain is my friend. It's part of the, you know, we just come off the Olympics, and we celebrate that engagement of people to work with their bodies strong and hard in those peak performance personal best experiences. And we champion the fact, and we all know the fact, that that is functionally, physiologically painful, what they're doing, and we champion it. But when it comes to childbirth, the cultural message is entirely the opposite. So that the cultural message, and I sometimes frame this in this idea of the three C's. So the cultural message seems to me, and you can tell me whether you think this holds for America as well, but the messages that the women are getting, firstly, that they should be comfortable in labor, that the birth can be convenient, and that it can be controlled. So comfort, convenience, and control. Now, partly I've seen this happening across the time that I've been working, and partly this has been enabled by some of the developments, the brilliant developments that have happened in sort of the birth world, but developments which have had unintended consequences. So, for instance, the issue about comfort. I mean, I'm pretty sure through most of our prehistory, women were never thinking that birth should be a comfortable process. It's not called labor for no good reason. You know, hard work, body working. And yet what has enabled this sort of idea of comfort is, of course, that epidural. I come now to talk about the epidural as the Trojan horse in the birth space, actually. I mean, having been around for such a long time, I was around working in the birth scene when epidurals started to first come into the scene, and we welcomed them in. We welcomed them in from the point of view of thinking, well, for women who really need a cesarean, this is so brilliant that the epidurals and their like can be used so that the mother can be conscious and aware when that baby's born. But, of course, for those of us passionate about normal birth, natural birth, we've seen that really we've been broadsided by the epidural in terms of, you know, this offering, this promise, this seduction, the siren song, the seduction of the epidural about being comfortable in labor. And so now the cultural message is, well, not only that you could be, that in fact you should be comfortable in labor. And so there's this sort of other aspect about more and more demonizing of pain in labor and a total pitying of women for the poor things of what they have to deal with, which really is so undermining of women's capacity and potency for standing strong in their bodies and doing that work of normal physiological childbirth. So the comfort aspect, certainly epidurals, brilliant for in all sorts of situations, but the unintended consequence is that it's shifted cultural expectation and a sort of cultural messaging to labouring women into a totally different scene than it was when I first started, of course.
Priya, so, and I want to be a little bit of a devil's advocate just for fun, not because I think you've hit the nail on the head. But, you know, because it's something that's so entrenched in our cultures now, we've gotten to a point that it's like at least 60%, if not more, use epidurals. So so why not be comfortable?
Well, of course, that's probably the dream. Well, for one reason, we go back to what we talked about already in terms of the hormones. We also know that, of course, epidurals, when they're medically needed, can facilitate, you know, things to be better for some mums and babies. Mm-hmm. But we know that those epidurals, yes, they can make that comfort, but they really muck up a whole lot of other things in terms of the labour, so that babies sometimes don't like them, so they're the drugs. And so the baby then starts to call the shots about this isn't okay. And so we know that epidurals boost the seizure rate. We also know that that aspect about epidurals where women are not able to feel their bodies means that they're unable to work so effectively in second stage to you know, birth their babies and so on. So there's a lot of downside. I mean, many people have written about all of this. And
well,
maybe
that's it.
Just...
They bring on, they also, they're not risk-free.
Exactly.
And they're not guaranteed to work either. And I think that's part of the things that moms aren't told.
Yes, exactly. And maybe just, you may know of this website. I think it comes out of either Canada or America, but it's a website called Birth by the Numbers.
Oh, yes. I had Jean de Klerk on the show. I interviewed him. Love
good.
Him. He's fantastic.
I know. I'm going to be presenting at a conference he's presenting at in Sydney in a few weeks, and Sarah as well.
Oh, good. Say hi.
So one of the things that they, you know, so that birth by the numbers is such a beautiful nuancing of what the statistics are about birth, and they draw them into these linkages. And one of the things that they put out, I think maybe last year, was that for low-risk women, so that's women who, you know, ideally we would think would be having a straightforward birth and that they should, the mother and the baby would, you know, be very healthy through the whole process. For low-risk women, if they went into labor spontaneously without being induced, and I'll maybe talk about that again in a moment. So if they go into labor spontaneously through the hormonal story and dance between the mum and the baby, and if they don't have an epidural, so spontaneous start of the labor, no epidural, so the mum being supported to work with her body and that intensity, then those women would end up with a 5% seizure rate, yeah, which is well underneath what the World Health Organization suggests is appropriate level of seizure for any population in the world. They suggest somewhere between 10 and 15% for appropriate use of seizures. So 5% for those low-risk women who go into labor spontaneously and don't have an epidural. However, for low-risk women, so the same body of women who are healthy and well through the pregnancy and before the birth starts, if they're induced with synthetic hormones and they have an epidural, then they will end up with a 31% seizure rate. It's a huge difference. And so some part of that is what that epidural does to that process, and that leads to the seizure. So I think it's sort of indisputable in terms of the research in lots of places. I mean, Penny Simpkin again over there in America has done beautiful work on this, as has Hensi Goer, again another beautiful researcher in America who you'll be aware of, that there are hidden costs to that promise of and seduction of comfort that the epidural is offering.
Mm-hmm. It's that so-called, well, no, the well-called cascade of interventions that, you know, the dominoes topple, one thing moves to the other, and the other, and then you're like, oh, this is the, you know, you're painted into a corner.
Yes, exactly. So that's part of, and it's informing the sort of cultural message, as I say, so that women, even if they feel like they want to have a go, they're just getting this cultural, oh, you don't have to be a martyr, you know, no, the epidural is the way to go, la, la, la. So it's, I think, a cultural undermining of that capacity of women to take on the birth in its potency.
Yeah,
the other C's I talk about are the, you know, the convenience, and that's, of course, is part of the unintended consequence of what's happening with seizures, but also the unintended consequence of using synthetic oxytocin to start labors. Synthetic oxytocin can get the contractions going, but it doesn't do any of that feeling state, open-hearted state of what normal, you know, naturally occurring oxytocin does. Neither does it push that link between the functional physiological pain, the endorphins, and so on. So we can make birth convenient through those means, but it means we lose out on all of the beautiful stuff that normal physiological childbirth offers. And, of course, that idea of controlling comes out of those things as well. So those three Cs, I think that cultural message is very undermining of women's sort of trust and faith in their bodies and their trust and faith in their own capacity to stay and work with their bodies. But another thing that I wanted to just go down to now is this idea of what I call pain dynamics. And it sort of is a next step on from what we're talking about.
So before you get into the pain dynamics, we have to take a quick break, but we'll be right back because I think that's super interesting that, you know, all this purpose of pain and reframing, because it gets you a lot of good at the end. It allows your body to get into a state that's going to, you know, give bonding an opportunity. So we'll be right back. Great news, mighty ones. Now, Birthful listeners can get a free month trial at expectful.com. That's 2 more weeks of free meditation than before. And if you've been meaning to try meditation, then now is the perfect time for you to jump on this offer. Meditating is a great way to reset your nervous system and mindfully bring yourself back to calm. And this is really important because if your nervous system spends more time in high alert and doesn't get to go back to baseline often, then your body is in constant state of stress, which is not healthy. Meditating is a super easy way to make sure you break up those stress signals. The best part is that you don't have to sit for long hours to see the benefits. If you have 5 minutes, then you have time to meditate. And it becomes even easier when you use a meditation app like Expectful. I have tried other meditation apps, and I really like how the Expectful one is designed to address your pregnant or new parent needs by focusing on whatever you need at that moment. Whether it's better sleep, connection with baby and partner, embracing your identity, lessening stress, dealing with uncertainty, Expectful makes it super easy for you. And I gotta say, I really enjoy the voice of the person who reads the meditations. Go to expectful.com/birthful to sign up for a free 4-week trial and check it out for yourself. Yep, that's a free full month to try it out. And don't forget to add the /birthful so you can get that free full month. So that's expectful.com/birthful. So we're back and we're talking about the dynamics of pain.
Okay, yes. So partly, I guess, because of the cultural message about comfort, which the epidural can you know, sort of promise. And also I think just more generally in Western cultures, you know, we're living much more sedentary lifestyles. I've seen over my years that what often used to be called transition. Well, I mean, there is transition in late first stage, that, you know, 8 to 10 centimetres we talk about as a transition. And it's sort of been over time that transition is talked about, the point when women feel like they can't go on, it's too much, it's too overwhelming, and that they have that sort of those vulnerable moments where they're feeling that it's not possible to keep going and to move into pushing their babies out. So mainly the literature has been, yes, about that if women reach those points in their labour, that it's assumed that they're in transition, which of course means that they're getting quite close to birthing their baby. And that knowledge can really boost women to feel like, oh, okay, yeah, probably I can do it because I'm just quite close to birthing my baby. But I've started to witness, and there was one birth in particular that really brought this fully to my attention. And remember, this sort of sits within my background of being a physical education teacher and so on. But it was a birth that I was called to. I'd been working with this woman through the pregnancy and was called to, and the midwife at the birth centre where the mother was working, was having her baby, phoned me to say, you know, Rhea, you better get here quick. You know, this baby's going to be born very soon, and so on, so on. So I dashed. And I could see what, so the mother was interpreting, the midwife was interpreting the mother's behaviour as transition. The mother was quite distressed, feeling like she couldn't go on and so on, saying all the things that we would naturally think might have been transition. And I could understand why the midwife was thinking that, but I guess I had a longer knowledge or interactions with these women, and it just didn't quite ring true to me where that she was actually as far along in the labour as the midwife thought. When we sorted it out, in fact, we found that the mother was actually only 1 to 2 centimetres. Really, she was just in very early labour, that shift from pre to early labour, and she was already very distressed and feeling that you know, she couldn't go on and that she wanted the epidural and so on. So the midwife was very surprised. The mother, of course, we had to do a lot of work with her to help her to regroup, which we were able to with a good team around her. But I started to talk to the midwife and then starting to talk more generally and hearing that there was this sort of misreading of the mother's distress as being transition was happening in more than just this case. So I started to feel like, as a childbirth educator, that I needed to be talking about this differently, not just always saying that when you get into a distressing point, that's going to be transition, but to talk about it differently. So I then started to talk about this idea of a crisis of confidence. And again, Adriano, if we go back to that idea of peak performance, you know, if somebody's running that marathon or any of those other physical pursuits, there's an idea that we might hit a pain barrier. We know there's nothing going wrong. We just know that we're reaching a point where it feels like it's too much, too strong, and so on, and that we want to give up. But in fact, we know that we need support to move through that pain barrier. And when we do move through that pain barrier again in those physical pursuits, those endorphins come through, that runner's high, or that bike rider's high, or that mountain climber's high. Same for birthing. So instead of calling it a pain barrier, as we might do in other pursuits, I started to talk about this crisis of confidence, that if women can be supported, understand that and normalize it, just the same way you would normalize it if you were running a marathon, and know that it's a sort of a predictable point that you might go through, and to make sure that you've got support people around you who also understand this and can encourage you through that crisis of confidence, that these are the points where those hormones, you know, ramp up and that the normal birth is unfolding so beautifully. It's just that you don't like it in those moments when you're dealing with those contractions. So that aspect of those points, those crisis of confidence points, separate to transition happening earlier in the labor, it's a bit, you know, more complex than I'm saying here about why that is the case. But nonetheless, as an educator, I've been talking about that for quite some years now and speak about it quite a lot in my book. And it seems to be very helpful for everybody to normalize, okay, that's what I'm likely to be going through, to prepare for it in terms of the people that they have with them, and also to be able to normalize in the midst of it, all right, here I'm meeting this challenge and I can work through it. So that, if that's not the case, so remember the cultural message is that actually women should be comfortable and that the epidural can promise that. So when women are in that space in the labor where they're experiencing what I'm calling a crisis of confidence, who's with them and what they can offer at that time. This crisis of confidence is not a medical crisis. There's nothing going wrong. Everything is going brilliantly. It's just a tough gig. So the way the mother is met and spoken to and supported at that point is crucial to what is going to now happen in this labor. Is she going to be supported through, encouraged through that crisis of confidence, or is the cultural sort of default of the drugs and the epidural and what have you going to start to become part of the picture? So in my way of understanding that, I've drawn on some work from a midwife, a professor of midwifery from England, and she also works here in Australia, called Nikki Leap, who had done some research some years ago looking at the attitudes of midwives towards pain in labour. Beautiful piece of work. The core elements that I take out of it are that there's sort of two paradigms, if you like. One is the attitude of the midwife, and I would say that this can relate much more generally about attitudes about pain in labour, is that either midwives have what we might call a pain relief paradigm or a working with pain paradigm. And if we think again about what we've been saying about that placing birth in a medical setting, of course, a pain relief paradigm is a medical construct. People in hospital or medical settings who are ill, things going wrong, damage, disease, danger, probably very important that there's pain relief so that their healing can be maximized. But birth, we stick it into that context and still using that pain relief framework, even though we know the pain in labor is not a signal of anything going wrong, it's just a signal of the potency of the body working brilliantly. Nonetheless, that pain relief, you know, the menu of the drugs, the expertise of the caregivers about which drug, how often, how much, what dosage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's, if that woman is feeling that crisis of confidence and she's surrounded by people who have a pain relief mindset, whether that's the medical people who are working with her or her own partner or support people who are feeling that pity for her, the poor thing, she shouldn't have to go through this, somebody please save her, she needs to be comfortable, so on, all of that as a sort of a cultural default, then that point of that crisis of confidence is going to be that pathway into that cascade of interventions that then unfolds. Or is the mother either because she's savvy enough or she's lucky enough to be surrounded by people who have a working with pain paradigm and philosophy instead of skills? So this would be your running coach, your yoga teacher, your personal trainer, your midwife who considers herself to be a midwife guardian of normal birth, because those midwives know that, like I've explained, that functional physiological pain in labor is so important for normal physiological childbirth. And that these points of vulnerability, these crises of confidence can be supported, that women, when they move through them, will be dropping deeper into that labor, those endorphins coming through and so on, all the things that we've talked about previously. So that working with pain philosophy means that at that point, if the mother is surrounded by that when she's in this vulnerable moment of these crises of confidence, is supported by that encouragement, that engagement of somebody to come close with her, to engage her back into her breathing, her rhythm, her reassurance about that everything is going brilliantly, and so she moves through that crisis of confidence. I mean, a well-supported crisis of confidence in a labor, maybe it's only 4 or 5 contractions. It could be 10 to 15 minutes. It's just that they're crucial moments, because either they're going to be supported through, and women will find a way to engage with a deeper rhythm on the other side of it and get onto a new groove, or that sort of default in the birth culture of the pain relief comes in, which we then know starts to often be the start of that cascade of interventions, as we've sort of talked about. Mm-hmm. So this idea of a crisis of confidence, then I talk about, what's the holding circle? So who's with the mother? That's not only her partner, her family or friends who she invites to be with her at the birth, but also who are the medically trained people who are engaging with her. And are these people, are they the sort of the enactors of the cultural pitying and saving pain relief default? Or are they people by savvy choices or brilliant luck and goddesses shining on the woman, people who have that working with pain mindset, who can really hold that mother through those few distressing contractions until she gets on that back into her own rhythm and into that groove for continuing on with the labor.
Rhea, so do you find that, so when women, like a pattern that you're describing, that she's obviously very distressed and feel presenting a bit like transition, like things are very intense, and is turns out to be early in the labor, that if she's properly supported and can regroup and find her confidence again and say yes to the labor instead of wanting to get away from it, that then things flow quicker or flow, go into a quick flow? Because it might have been that the labor's already been quite many hours with this intensity.
Yes.
Do you find that it's more that it's just kind of waiting for the mom to say, okay, I'm going to stop fighting it? Or what can be helpful to the mom in that moment? Because they can think, oh, it's been this intense and this long to get to here, and I'm quote unquote only one. I can't do 3 more days of this. And
it's a beautiful question you're asking. And of course, it makes me put on my childbirth educator hat. That it's very important for women to have an understanding of not just the stages of labor, first, second, third stage that we talk about, and also now talking about fourth stage beautifully, but to understand those phases. And of course, so that aspect about pre and or early labor. So some I talk about pre-labor, early labor, established labor, and then transition in first stage. And of course, they have a different rhythm to them. And often these crises of confidence are predictable to come at points where the labor is sort of shifting gears, it's intensifying. So if women can be educated beforehand, first of all, and also with good people with them at the time, to say that, okay, maybe in pre-labor, early labor, it's been going on and off like this for a day, and you're feeling like you're only 1 or 2 centimeters, and so then you're thinking, well, you're hardly even on, you know, into the game yet in a way, and that that means if it's going to take me a day for each centimeter that I'm doing, but of course that's not the reality at all. There's a building momentum, and once women get to, you know, to that next step, it's always escalating in terms of the intensity but also the speed at which the labor is going. So in answer to your question, the simple answer is yes, of course it does, because those crisis points generally are letting us know that she's on the cusp of one of these big jump-up points in the labour, and if she can get through it, which is sort of the, you know, sadly, another part of what I do is lots and lots of counselling and birth debriefing and for women who've been distressed about their births or traumatised by their births. And when we go back through the birth, you know, it's so sad for me to see that often the point at which certain choices are made, particularly around the pain, really, she's just on the cusp of one of these points where that labor is really going to intensify, that the hormones are going to shift and change, that the moderation of the pain, the dropping deep into that evolutionary regression, she's just on the cusp of it, and nobody's been able to really, you know, support her to take that deep surrender into that shift, but rather in a way they're robbing of that chance in a way, and then that whole cascade of interventions. So it's a bit more complex than I guess I'm saying here, but generally, yes, they happen on the cusp of a big change. If women can be supported to go through them, the labor the momentum is going to be increasing, which means that it will be going faster than it had been before that point. So they're all selling points, I guess, about encouraging women into that intensity. But also, even with what we're talking about, it's understandable about how in those moments women need experienced people around them who they trust. And by experienced, I mean people who are experienced in what normal physiological childbirth takes, what it looks like, what the rhythm of it's like, the normalizing of these sort of challenge points, so that that mother, when she's in that struggle and somebody is looking her in the eye and saying, you know, you're here, but you know, you're doing brilliantly, and let's just breathe through these next contractions. You're going to, you know, let's shift and change. Let's do this, let's do that, and move her from that point of feeling like she can't go on into that surrendered, deeper engagement with the birth. There's expertise and skill in that, which, of course, we've had worldwide over eons, but it's being reclaimed, I think, but it's also under threat by the what's going on with the cultural message. So those of us who do this work, and I'm sure you know these points very well in the work that you do supporting the women that you work with, it's such a gift, isn't it, when we can see that potency of the mother coming forward once she moves through those points of vulnerability into that strengthened place to go on with that work of that birthing, and then those hormones flowing into that, you know, that love bomb of oxytocin, mm-hmm. and that baby's born, and the mother is feeling her own potency and power. She's totally tuned to that baby. That baby, of course, is just ready and waiting for that bonding, and everybody in the circle has gotten a bit of that love bomb as well, and we're all really in that beautiful place of awareness of the baby and the baby's needs, and that bonding of families and bonding of communities. It's such what privileged work we do, huh?
It's such an honor to be able to bear witness and hold space and be able to see the mom do this hard thing, get through this thing, because I mean every single mom gets to a point that says, I can't do this. It's part of it. You have to completely give in, and it takes you to the edge. So I am incredibly grateful to you for saying what you just said, of that it's not just specific to transition, but that these moments can happen at very different stages, and sometimes they can happen really early on, and they can be so hard on the moms because that's not what they were expecting at all.
Exactly. So it was really why I come as an educator to talk about this, so that we can normalize that rather than women going in feeling like, well, if I've done my breathing, I've done this, and it's just going to be some sort of smooth flow, and I'll meet it without any challenge because I've got these tools, but it's not quite how it is. So to be able to normalize that and to prepare for it seem, in terms of my work, good feedback in terms of explaining that, and midwives certainly see it, and it helps them to explain to women when they're in the midst of labor about that. So it seems to be a useful concept. So
Absolutely.
I'm
Absolutely.
hoping that anybody who might be listening can find that useful as well.
Yeah. So, Rhea, if listeners want to learn more about what you do, learn more about these concepts, contact you, follow you, where can they do that?
Okay, so on my website is one aspect. So my website is birthingwisdom.com.au. Although, of course, these days they could Google my name and then they find out all sorts of things. But Facebook, there's a little bit on Instagram. I also have written a book, as I said, and I think you mentioned as well, that although not entirely, but is really a lot to do with these pain dynamics and that I'm just sharing a little bit about. I'm working on another book at the moment too, which is really about a little bit more complexity in terms of the stories that women bring to their births that sometimes can also create an extra challenge for the labour, but that's for another talk. So
When's
they
that
can.
book going to be out?
Yeah. We might say that I'm in a crisis of confidence about it at the moment. I've got to work through, but hopefully, I was hoping at the end of this year. But I also have another beautiful, delicious grandchild to come at the end of the year. So, if the book doesn't happen this year, then my energies are going to be tuned towards grandmothering intensely for a little while. So it'll be into next year. But watch this space.
Yes,
So.
no, very much so. I would love to, and whenever that happens, that you come out, come back and let's talk about that book and the
Yes.
concepts in there. I'd love to.
Yes, that'd be great. Good.
Yay.
So I think that people can find those ways to make contact, and I'd love to be having conversations with people if they might
Fantastic.
find it useful. Good.
And I will put all these links on the show notes so that they can find it that way as well, so they can easily go to all the things you mentioned. And also, you gave a lot of different. You mentioned Nikki Leap
Yes.
and Sarah's work, and I'll link to all of that as well.
Fantastic.
Thank
Great.
you so much for taking the time to do this. It's been a real pleasure.
And thank you for your passion about birth as well on the other side of the world. And beautiful to be speaking to people who might hear our passion and be inspired.
Mighty ones, check out the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can learn more about me, the show, Patreon member benefits, send me messages, and more. I'm also on Facebook or Twitter as @birthful, so come say hi. And if you're in the last few months of pregnancy and feeling unprepared for what's to come, then go sign up for my Thrive With Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes at birthfulcourses.com. Let's get you postpartum ready. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the Birthful Patreon supporters, and by the wonderful Megan Othling and the also wonderful people at Casual Tree Maternity and Expectful. To best support this podcast, support its sponsors, and get discounts while you're at it, go to casualtree.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off your purchase of $20 or more. And go to expectful.com/birthful to sign up for your free 1 month trial. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin MacLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts focused on parents and parenting. Download the free Parents on Demand app for Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. I'm Adriana Losada. Please join me Wednesday when I'll be talking to a new birth professional to inform your intuition here at the Birthful podcast. Thanks so very much for listening.